Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday evening with me. I really do appreciate it, especially on a night like tonight. It is so beautiful out there, looking out the window. Then we're in Southern California. I'm not sure how dark it is on the East Coast right now, but we're certainly enjoying the weather out here right now. Hey, today we're going to be talking about virtual kidnappings. You got to listen to this. I mean, it's really incredible. And then I'm also going to be talking about the 2019 scams and frauds for you to watch out for. All right, yeah, scams and frauds. You got to be careful. So make sure you have your pens and paper ready on this one. Now, look, if anybody wants to call in, if you have any questions that you want to share, comments that you want to share, you can reach me at 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. Or you can email me, as so many people do, at listenup@pottsandassociates.com. Excuse me. And if you want to get on my blog or email blast about upcoming show topics, text POTS Associates and text that to 22828, and that's your email address. And again, that's text POTS Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. Okay? All right. Fantastic. Hey, look, let me start off, as always, by reading my emails. This is Jim. Jim, I recently attended one of your active shooter trainings and followed your advice of sharing the information with my family. We have gone over everything that you suggested, and the information was well received by my immediate family and my brother and his family. Thank you so much for the information. We feel safe already, and that's signed by Peter. Okay, Peter, well, hey, you know, I'm glad that you did that, because that's always the advice that we give out. We tell people never make assumptions that it can't happen to them, and I'm glad that you followed through and that you did that. And good luck to you and your family with all of this. Stay safe. All right, second email. Jim, what is your opinion of President Trump shutting down our southern border because of the threat of all these people trying to sneak in? Don't you think there could be terrorists hidden within these people? Terry, Yuma, Arizona. Well, look, again, I don't get into the political part of it, so I'll approach it from a common sense standpoint. Common sense dictates to me, based upon some of the information that I got when I was on the open source intelligence team about Central and South America, and there's always the possibility that those things can happen. I know some people have already been weeded out that they thought were people from countries that might do harm to us, I'll put it that way. I believe that there could be people hidden within these people, so to speak, as you said. And, you know, in terms of shutting down the border, obviously that's not any of our call. That's the President of the United States' call. I'm not getting into whether he's right or wrong or for his reasonings for doing it. I'm more specifically addressing your issue as to whether or not do I think that terrorists might sneak in there. Hey, there's a possibility. Look, when I do these active shooter trainings, here's what I always talk about. I talk about the fact that if we have a major threat to this country, it's not going to come by air. It's not going to come by sea, and it's not going to come down through Canada. There's only one place, in my opinion, for it to come up through, and that's our southern border. So to me, the powers that be have to take all of that into consideration and make whatever calls that they want to make. I don't personally have anything against people trying to get a better life for themselves. Let me make that clear. I don't want people sending me all this hate mail. I don't care about people, you know, who want to try to make a better, you know, lives from themselves. I mean, if I was in that situation, I'd probably want to try to gravitate and get here myself. So I'll leave it like that. All right, third, Jim, there was a federal assault weapons ban at one time, and now that ban has expired. Have you seen or heard any impact on shootings with assault weapons before or during after the ban? Joe, Pittsburgh, PA. Yeah, there actually is information that's available to us about that. They have looked at this and researched this, obviously, as you can imagine that they would have. And before I get started, though, because I got an email coincidentally along the lines that we always talk about these assault weapons, and people ask, look, what exactly is an assault weapon per se? We make an assumption in terms of what it is. I know I got some gun advocates out there, so if this isn't quite right, hey, you know, feel free to call in and correct me if need be. Now, it's what they, you know, obviously we know that these things are at the forefront of the political debate. Now, let me tell you what an assault weapon is. It's a nebulous and recent term that usually refers to a group of military-style magazine-fed magazines, by the way, are the housing for the shells, for the bullets, automatic and semi-automatic rifles and handguns. Now, a semi-automatic fires one shot when the trigger is pulled, then automatically reloads. Now, that's permitted without license in most of the United States jurisdictions, to be honest with you. That's just a simple handgun that you can actually purchase. As long as your background is clean, you can get it. All right? So that's called a semi-automatic. Fires one shot when the trigger is pulled, then automatically reloads. A fully automatic fire as long as their triggers are depressed. These are the ones you're thinking about that these mass shootings take place with. Now, those are prohibited without proper registration in the United States. Everybody just can't own one of these fully automatic. Now, I do, like I said, have friends who have in the past made these off of the Internet. People go to these gun shows. These things become, you know, available, you know, different ways. But that's basically what it is. So that's an assault weapon. You got a semi-automatic and you got a fully automatic. Again, fully automatic, it fires as long as the triggers are depressed. Semi-automatic fires one shot when the trigger is pulled and then automatically reloads. All right, that's the difference in the two. Just to clarify that inquiry from a listener who sent an email to me. Now look, Joe, I have to tell you, yeah, for about a 10-year period, there was a federal ban on assault weapons. And that gun ban was enacted to protect people from the mass shootings that were happening in America. There's no doubt about it. The argument has always been whether or not that was the weapon of choice that people use, because I just said there's a semi-automatic, those are pistols, and a lot of people have used that. Now, some could point to the, you know, to 1999 is the year where the ban didn't have any effect, when that's true, and with school shootings and other tragic events that year. There was a definite pronounced spike in both areas. Now, this goes back, obviously, because when the ban was in place, not in place, et cetera. So there was a difference then. Now, over the years, there's different things that have been happening. So let me just give you some stats on that real quick for you as well. Now, look, in 1994, when the federal assault weapons ban was approved, there were 1.5 million privately owned assault weapons that were responsible for 2% of total gun crimes. All right, that was in 94. Again, this is when the ban, you know, started. Every assault weapon on large capacity magazine that was owned at that time was grandfathered into law and allowed to be transferred. See, so to me, that's problematic. So even though there was a ban per se, you got to understand about what was still going on behind the scenes. You could still transfer things. People that had guns, you know, they were grandfathered in where they're allowed to be transferred. Now, Americans also have been estimated to own 25 million guns that had large capacity magazines that were also affected by the ban. 25 million guns out there, people. That is a lot of guns. How in the world? Now, I know that some of the local law enforcement agencies at one point were paying people to turn in their assault weapons that they had, et cetera. Sometimes that worked. I know in Los Angeles it worked to a certain extent, certain small extent, I should say. It wasn't on a major scale at all. And the large capacity magazines were more likely to be used in a crime and accounted for more than 1 in 4 gun incidents, according to some of the research that was out there. Now, look, I will tell you that some communities did see a decrease of crime using banned weapons up to about 17%. There was an equal rise in the use of other guns to commit crimes, though. Look, when they're going to commit crimes, they're going to commit crimes. And that's really the bottom line. They're going to figure out a way to do it. Now, the whole purpose of the federal assault weapon ban, it was a social experiment, to be honest with you. And that's the only way to really describe the issue, since part of the law's passage was to commission a study about the effects of the law 30 months after it was enacted. Some might point to the accomplishments, such as the lower overall crime rate, but crime has been trending consistently lower for the 20 years even before that. So we're not sure that really had to do with anything, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, I could tell you what was discovered during the ban was that most people don't use assault weapons to commit a crime, and those that do will either still use one or just get a different gun to accomplish their goals. I mean, like I said, robbers are going to do what they have to do, whether there's a ban in place not or not in place. Now, there was a national survey that was done, and that was kind of privately conducted. They said, well, 37% of police agents in the United States had noted an increase in the amount of assault weapons being noticed on criminals that they contact. 53% of police agencies stated that they've seen an increase in the amount of large caliber handguns. So you see what I'm saying? You don't let them have one, they're going to get another. 38% of police agencies have stated that weapons holding 10 or more rounds have become more noticeable in their jurisdictions, and many weapons could be slightly modified, such as removing a bayonet plug, they call it, from an AR-15. AR means automatic rifle, and qualify for a sale under the weapons ban so that the weapons were still being sold during that 10-year period. Now, they say that only about 3.7% of murders were committed with the use of handguns these type of guns at that time. Now, Joe, here's the other thing. The question that came up at that time was whether or not the assault weapons ban would have any reverse effect. And I think is what ended up happening was that the issue became the magazines, and how many rounds can be held in a magazine. So I know that there was a lot of issues with that to reduce the amount. Even with the gun shows, et cetera, they turned around and said, hey, you know, the magazines are too big. Now, I have to tell you, I agree with that. We don't need that many magazine large enough to hold more than 10 shots. I mean, a lot of the guys that buy those, they go to the gun range, they have some fun with it. So what? You know, trade it out. When I go to the gun range and I have my weapons that I take there, I think the biggest magazine I have is 5. You know, I'm going out there practicing with my 30-06 and a couple of others like that. You know, only holds about 5. So what? All you do is just change it out. And you finish shooting, you end up refilling it back up. So, I don't know. We'll see. Now, look, I can tell you that they had a number of mass shootings, and that 48% of those were done by semi-automatic handguns. Only 25% were assault weapons, and 14% were revolvers. So just to give you an idea about that as well. You turn around, look at an AK-47. Let me tell you something. That only has 8 moving parts. It's cheap to manufacture. It's light, and it's easy to use. So, you know, those AK-47s, they're problematic. They only cost about $400, to be honest with you. They're not very expensive at all, but people do have access to them. So to me, I look at it and say those things are all problematic. And again, people can do whatever they need to do, make a long story short. Okay, well, look, that just gives you a rough idea about what we're talking about, Joe, to answer your question. Did it change anything? To me, all of these things are always debatable, always debatable. So from that perspective, I say ban, no ban, it doesn't matter. People are going to do what they want to do. If they're going to create harm to people, they're going to find a weapon of choice, and they even find bombs, you know, someplace with, you know, explosions and all of that. So I don't know. We'll just wait and see. It's something that they're debating about once again in Washington, D.C. I think that's what the politicians are supposed to do, to handle the outcry from their constituents. It'll be back and forth all the time. But meanwhile, the killers will keep doing what they do because they're not paying attention to what's going on in Washington, Joe. Okay, hey, let's talk about the virtual kidnappings. Look, you guys, this is a new twist on a frightening scam. They got people out there about this issue about virtual kidnapping, and let me kind of tell you what that's about. Now, I will tell you, the law enforcement agencies have been aware of virtual kidnappings fraud for at least 20 years. I kid you not. But now, recently, it's coming more and more to light. This at one time, to be honest with you, was limited to Mexico and Southwest border states. Yeah, Mexico and Southwest border states. And now it's evolved so that United States anywhere could be potential victims. Now, I can tell you that virtual kidnapping takes on many forms. It has always been and will be continue to be an extortion scheme, one that tricks the victims into paying a ransom to free a loved one they believe is being threatened with violence or death. Now, look, unlike traditional abductions, virtual kidnappers have not actually kidnapped anyone. They haven't kidnapped anyone. Instead, through deceptions and threats, they coerce victims to pay a quick ransom before the scheme falls apart. Now, I can tell you in L.A., the investigators through the FBI division, they were tracking virtual kidnapping calls. And then where they were coming from? They were coming from Mexico. Yep, I kid you not. Almost all of these schemes originated from within Mexican. Are you ready for this? Prisons. They originated in Mexican prisons. And you wonder, you say, my God, how does that happen? Well, the calls targeted specific individuals who were Spanish speakers. And a majority of the victims were from the Los Angeles and Houston areas. And the calls were started coming in English as far back now as 2015. Now, remember, before Mexico, coming out of Mexican prisons, and you're like, how is that all coming together? Well, I can tell you, they started doing it in English. The FBI in Los Angeles caught on to it. The criminals were no longer targeting specific individuals such as doctors or just Spanish speakers. They have started choosing various cities and cold calling hundreds of numbers until innocent people fall for the scheme. Now, you say, well, wait a minute, how's this happen? I'm coming to it because I know you want to know. Now, I'm going to tell you something. This is a big change. This is a big change because they expanded out. The new tactic vastly increased the potential number of victims when you think about it. Now, because it expanded out, from California, Minnesota, Idaho, and even Texas. Now, let me tell you what they were doing. These guys were incarcerated. Again, I can't stress enough. They were in jail in Mexico. The incarcerated fraudsters, they would typically bribe guards to acquire cell phones. And then they would choose an affluent area such as Beverly Hills. And they would search the internet to learn the correct area code and telephone dialing prefix. Then, with nothing but time on their hands, they start dialing numbers in sequence, trolling for victims. Now, are you getting this? First of all, they're getting cell phones from the guards who they're bribing. The second thing that they're doing is searching the internet. How are they searching the internet? Think about that. They're in prison. Now, I know even in here, in this country, prisons have a lot of rights. I'm not going to argue about prisons having rights, okay? So let me make that clear. But these guys sit up there and they actually have access to computers. These guys actually have access to the internet in a Mexican prison. And these guys they got all the time in the world. They're in jail. And they start doing this. Now here's what happens. When an unsuspecting person answers the phone, they would hear a female screaming, "Help me," in the background. The screamer's voice was likely a recording. People don't realize that. All they do is hear the voice, "Help me," and it's a woman. Instinctively, the victim might blurt out his or her child's name, "Mary, are you okay?" or something of that nature. Okay, remember, they're just trolling. They just make phone call after phone call after phone call. Then is what you'll hear is a man's voice would say something like, "We have Mary. She's in a truck. We're holding her hostage. You need to pay a ransom, and you need to do it now, or we're going to cut off her fingers." This is the kind of stuff these guys were doing from inside of Mexican prisons. Now, I can tell you that most of the time, the intended victims quickly learned that Mary was at home or at school, or they sensed the scam and hung up. This fraud only worked when people picked up the phone, they had a daughter, and she was not home. But if you're making hundreds of calls, these guys are just there making call after call after call, the chances are the crime is going to eventually work. So what am I telling you guys? Don't fall for that nonsense if it happens to you. I mean, I know what we have. We have our loved ones. Hey, somebody calls you like that, what do you do? I'm going to cover that in a second. Now, the scammers attempt to keep victims on the phone so they can't verify their loved ones' whereabouts or contact law enforcement. So they keep them on the phone. The callers are always in a hurry. Keep that in mind. And the ransom demand is usually a wire payment to Mexico of $2,000 or less because there are legal restrictions for wiring larger amounts across the border. That's why the dollars stay low. All right? That's why the dollars stay low. Now, look, personally, I would be skeptical the moment they said wire it to Mexico. I'm going to have a problem with that because that wouldn't make sense to me. That wouldn't make sense. Now, You look at that and say that the victims were typically instructed to wire the ransom payments. Two individuals in Houston, as an example, were coerced into paying a large amount. See, that's why they were doing it to, like, in the California area, Houston area, places that were close to the border, because that person, you know, that loved one could have been snatched and driven across the border. But now, like I said, it's extending out as far as some of these other states now. Now, here's one situation where the victims were directed to make money drops and they believe they were being watched and they were directed to the assigned location. So understand, that's how they're doing it now also. So now it's just not about sending money. Now they're going to tell you, hey, go take it to the park. There's a trash can there. You know, put it in the bottom of the trash can or something. That's how they're doing it now. Now look, these Mexican prisoners who carry out virtual kidnappings use the ransom money to pay bribes and to make their lives better behind bars. Sometimes they even use the money to buy their way out of jail. That's the ultimate goal. Now, there was, believe it or not, there was actually a Texas woman that was charged in a virtual kidnapping scheme. Yeah. And those victims were typically instructed to wire money as well to different places. Now, let me tell you something. Logic dictates. And by the way, if anybody has any comments about this, you can call in 818-602-4929. Okay? Now, look, these virtual kidnapping cases, they're difficult to investigate, think about it, and to prosecute, because almost all of the subjects are in Mexico, and the money is wired out of the country, which makes it hard to trace. The charges against some of these people, you know, these federal indictments, yeah, they could be out there, but they got to enforce that at some point. And I got to tell you, a lot of the victims don't report the crime. The reason they don't report the crime is quite simple. They're embarrassed. They're afraid. You know, or they don't consider the financial loss to be significant, meaning that the person, depending on who the person was, you know, it's a doctor, lawyer, whatever the case may be, the $2,000 may not seem like it's a big deal. They got over on them, but it was a limited amount. It was a limited amount. Now, think about something else, though. The victims of these things, they could get traumatized behind this. Because at the time, they believe that a loved one has been kidnapped and is in real danger. Look, don't fall for this kind of stuff, honestly. We had, I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago where I had one client that got scammed because somebody from a government agency had contacted him and said that he had heard that they were selling marijuana out of his business, and they were going to be out there on Monday to come in there and shut down the business and do a big investigation, and you know they would hold up on it if he sent them $3,000, and you know they would have everything transferred out here from New York, so it would be a little bit easier for him, because they were contemplating arresting him as well. And he turns around and only sent him $1,500. Come on, guys. Look, don't be a victim. Because I'm going to tell you, the success of any type of virtual kidnapping schemes depends on speed and fear. Keep that in mind. It depends on speed and fear. Stay in control of your emotions. Think about what makes sense from a common sense standpoint. Criminals know they only have a short time to exact a ransom out of you before the victims unravel the scam or the authorities become involved. So to avoid becoming a victim, look, let me give you some possible indicators, okay? Here's some possible indicators. Callers go to great lengths to keep you on the phone, insisting you remain on the line. They don't want you off that line, okay? So remember that. Calls do not come from the supposed victim's phones. They use another phone. Callers try to prevent you from contacting the kidnapped victim. They don't want you to try to call the so-called kidnapped victim. Let me call my daughter real quick. That's not what they want you to do. So what they're going to do is have a conversation that if they see that person's cell phone light up and it's you, it's going to be problematic. Calls include demands for ransom money to be paid, normally by a wire transfer to Mexico. Also, as I told you now, they're trying to do the drops. And the ransom amount demands may drop quickly. So if they turn around and say, well, it's $5,000, they may turn around and say, well, you know, and tell them, look, I don't have $5,000. Fine. What are you willing to settle? What are you willing to send us? $1,000. Fine. We'll take the $1,000. So watch for those kind of things, okay? So remember, they go to great lengths to keep you on the phone, insisting you remain on the line. The calls do not come from the victim's phone. Callers try to prevent you from contacting the kidnapped victim. And then finally, watch, because all of a sudden the ransom amount starts to drop quickly when they realize that you may not have the money that they're asking for. All right? Now, if you receive a call from someone demanding a ransom from an alleged victim, here's what you need to think about. In most cases, the best course of action is just simply hang up the phone. I know that might be tough because you think they have your loved one, all right? But just remember what I'm telling you. If you do engage the caller, don't call out your loved one's name. You may turn around to somebody, you may turn around to your husband or your wife and say, "Oh my God, they've got Mary." You know, so now they actually have the name of the of your child. So don't do that. Try to slow the situation down. Request to speak to your family member directly. Ask, "How do you know my loved one? How do I know my loved one is okay? I need to talk to Mary." Force it. Ask questions only the alleged kidnapped victim would know, such as the name of a pet. Avoid sharing information about yourself or your family. Fine, you've got my daughter. Ask my daughter to tell you the name of our pet, you know, the name of our dog. All right, do something like that. Listen carefully to the voice of the alleged victim if they speak. So listen carefully, because remember, your emotions are going to be running hard and fast. So if you hear the alleged victim in the background, listen to see if that sounded like your child. Attempt to contact, or your loved one, attempt to contact the alleged victim via phone, text, or social media, and request that they call back from their cell phone. All right? To buy time, repeat the caller's request and tell them that you're writing down the demand, or tell the caller you need time to get things moving. What are you doing? You're stalling. Stall, stall, stall. All right? But don't be too obvious with it. Don't agree to pay a ransom by wire or in person. Delivering money in person can also be dangerous. And if you suspect a real kidnapping has taken place, or you believe a ransom demand is a scheme, contact your nearest FBI office or local law enforcement office immediately. Tips to the FBI can also be submitted online at tips.fbi.gov. Again, tips.fbi.gov. All right? All tipsters may remain anonymous, just to let you know that. All right? So you guys got that? Again, the show is all archived, so if you need to write any more of that down, you can always go back and look it up and go from there. All right? But don't fall for this stuff, people. There was a woman in Houston, I think I kind of briefly mentioned that, where with her, the victims were typically instructed to wire money to individuals in Mexico. And they were also given specific money drops. Now, she eventually got caught. And some of this information that we're able to get, that's how they're able to figure out exactly how this little bogus system works. So beware. FBI is all over this. You can always go on their website to get additional information if need be and go from there. Now, just remember, that fraud only works when you pick up that phone. Okay, so if it doesn't sound right to you, get off of it. Get off of it. Now, if you do get one of these calls, I'm going to give you a phone number you can call as well. So if you receive one of these calls, contact the FBI. The number is 505-889-1300. Again, that's 505-889-1300. Because this is happening in New Mexico also. All right, so again, it's starting to spread out. Okay, I think that was all I really wanted to cover on this. I hope the information, as always, is useful to you. All right, let's keep moving. Next thing I want to talk to you about are the current 2019 top 10 list of scams and frauds. Yep, now you heard that one already. So bear with me on this. We're going to go through 10 of these. So again, take yourself a break. Take yourself a little... Get yourself a little sip of whatever, and let's look at the rest of these. Okay, here's the top 10 scams. The first one, debt collection. Debt collection. Most of the complaints under this category involve debt collectors. consumers tell of receiving calls from harassing collectors who are threatened and will repeatedly call attempting to collect a debt. Other harassing collectors, complaints, I should say, that fall under this category involve credit and debit card fees, payday loans, credit repair companies, and unauthorized use of credit and debit cards. Some of these complaints, they say, involve hidden fees and billing disputes as well. So debt collection. If somebody's calling you regarding a debt collection, all right, you turn around and say, you know what, I'll call back the company myself and I'll take care of it. That's all you have to do. Don't fall for that. Now, here's the next one, number two. Fake government officials. Look, if you receive an email, letter, or phone call from a government agency like the IRS or the FBI, I told you one about the FBI, you know, with the law enforcement, with that client, and it instructs you to wire Western Union or MoneyGram money someplace or follow a link and enter the information, don't believe it. Let me tell you something. The United States government would never instruct anyone to use these methods to pay any bill or carry out a financial transaction, particularly with an overseas bank or agency. Don't do it. And I'm going to tell you, the IRS, they don't call you like that. They do everything by mail. All right? They do everything by mail. The third one is identity theft, and I kind of really went through that a lot last week. And now is what they're doing is what they call phishing and farming. Scammers gain access to your confidential information like Social Security numbers, date of birth, and then use it to apply for credit cards, loans, and financial accounts. Typically, the victim receives an email that appears to be from a credible real bank or credit company with links to a website and a request to update account information. But the website and emails are fake, made to look like the real website. Don't fall for that. Once again, call them yourself. I know my wife does that. We get that kind of stuff. She double checks. She double checks everything with these kind of things. And as I told you with identity theft, I told you last week that you can always freeze your your account with the, if you have one of those one of those places that checks your credit and things of that nature. You can do that. And even with your credit cards, there's a lot that you can do with your credit card companies by calling them, alerting them, put that freeze on there. And nothing can get charged or checking your credit can get, that can go through because they put a freeze on it, basically. Okay? So check that out. Again, that was last week. You could go back and look at that. Okay, the next one's phone scams. Now, this includes telemarketers violating the do not call list. They have these robo-dialers, and I'm sure you guys get those scammers calling up pretending to be from a bank or a credit card company. The National Do Not Call Registry, or the National Do Not Call List, offer consumers a free way to reduce telemarketing calls. Scammers call anyway. And, of course, they've even found a way to scam consumers by pretending to be a government official calling to sign you up or confirming your previous participation. Don't fall for that kind of stuff. All right. Another one, another good example of that, your Microsoft license key has expired. And now they all of a sudden they got you on there and they're trying to get you to re-up or whatever the case may be, and it's not even time to do so. Loans, loan scams, credit fixers. Look, false promises of business or personal loans, even if credit is bad for a fee up front, or a scam that promises to repair your credit for a fee. Look, you can repair your own credit yourself. Don't fall for that nonsense. All you have to do is get in touch with all of your creditors, work it out with your creditors, whatever the case may be. Okay, you can also get a copy of your credit report. Go through that credit report. See if anything looks incorrect on there and write to them. You can dispute that stuff yourself. That's all they're going to do. Supposedly, that's all they're going to do anyway. You can do it yourself. The next one always gets you. Fake prizes and sweepstakes, free gifts. Everybody likes getting free gifts. Look, if you receive an email claiming that you want a prize, lottery, or gift, and you only have to pay a small fee to claim it to cover the handling costs, these include scams which can go under the name of genuine lotteries. All right, it can actually happen. Look, these unsolicited emails or telephone calls, Don't fall for that. Nobody gives you something for free. All right? So just keep that in mind. You can even get a call congratulating you on winning a substantial prize, national lottery. I'll tell you another one. We get these emails on occasion from Africa or someplace out that way where somebody needs a contact here and, you know, they've got all this money just sitting there, or they've named you as a beneficiary and you got a contact. I mean, this stuff is out there. You got to ignore that. Don't fall for that okie doke. Somebody calls you or sends you an email like that, you think somebody out there is just all of a sudden going to contact you and say, here's all this money for you? Come on. Come on. I know some people, I know people that have turned around and contacted some of those places. Don't fall for that. You know, you need money that bad? Come on now. That's how people get, you know, how people get caught. Get you know, and when I mean caught, I mean cheated. You know, W.C. Fields once said you can't cheat an honest man. Now, I'm not telling you guys that you're dishonest, but understand, nobody is going to just give you, you know, money like that. You've got a rich relative somewhere that wants to bestow all this money on you. It's not going to come through an email. Trust me. All right? Okay. Next one. Internet merchandise scams, guys. Shopping online. Buying online scams. Look, a lot of people purchase something online, but it's either never delivered or it's not what they claimed it was, or it's defective. Online shopping and other shop from home, such as the catalog, mail and phone shopping scams, they're on the rise. They know people are doing this. You need to look in the corner. I think I may have mentioned this last week, but you need to look on. When you're doing that shopping online, see if they have that good, the Better Business seal or something of that nature. And they'll probably start even duplicating that if they know the people are watching it too close. But when you're shopping online, hey, and don't use a debit card. Don't do that. Now, automobile-related complaints, and they got warranty scams out there, warranty scams. So you're talking about car loans, car buying, car sales, auto repair, fake or useless extended warranties. Some of the complaints allege consumers pay for repairs and that the service provider was shoddy. Consumers reported repair companies that returned vehicles to the consumer in a worse condition than how it was initially given to them. Other complaints involve consumers not receiving title to their vehicles at the time of the sale. You got to look at all of that. I mean, just think about all the different categories I've given you so far. This stuff is ridiculous. And, you know, then they got number 10 here, is that they got phishing and spoofing emails. Emails that pretend to be from a company, organization, or government agency, but ask you to enter or confirm your personal information. Look, if you don't know exactly what's going on with any of that, don't be entering information on there. All right? Personal information, once it's out there on the internet, it is out there. Now, I'm going to give you a few others here. Fake check payments. You sell something online through a Craigslist consumers, and you've paid with phony. You get paid with phony checks, and instructed to wire money back to the buyer. The check looks real, but after you try to cash it, you find out it's a fake, and you're arrested for passing a counterfeit check. Don't do that. All right. All this business about online, guys. Look at all of this. It's because of technology. It's because of the way things are changing. Our world is changing. I mean, Amazon. The other day, one of my associates ordered something on Friday. They said it was going to be there on Monday. Amazon had it there the next day. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, that goes to show you the direction that we're going in with shopping. We can order something online today and have it tomorrow. People are going to take advantage of that. And when I say advantage of that, I'm talking about in the wrong way. Now, they also have what they call recovery and refund companies out there. So a scammer contacts and claims you owe money on a debt, or the scammer offers to recover money lost in a previous scam or something of that nature. Man, again, nobody just gives you something for free. They're going to contact you and tell you all this money's out there for you, and they'll get it for you for a fee, and you give them a fee thinking you're actually going to get it. Now, the next one is computer performance, equipment, and software. Scammers claim to offer technical support for computer problems and charge a fee to fix non-existent problems. So be careful with that. We've got a guy that does all of our issues. We've been using him for years. Get somebody you're comfortable with. All right? Online dating scams, guys. Fake profiles of scammers posing as attractive men and women, then claiming they need money to help in an emergency, typically when they claim to be out of the country on a business trip. Hey, on that one right there, let me tell you, my office, about a year and a half ago, I think it was, somehow or another, they had hacked the system. It wasn't our system so much that they hacked, but they turned around and sent an email out that I had been in a situation in Europe and that, in fact, I had been beaten up, put in the hospital, needed money. They had stolen all my money, and I needed money to get back. We had clients actually calling the office wanting to know where they could send the money to. And they're like, what are you talking about? Yeah, we got an email that Jim, you know, was hurt, you know, and I forgot what country it was hurt, and they're asking for us to send money that he said that he needs money in order to take care of his medical bills and to be able to get him, you know, back to the United States. They're like, Jim is not even in Europe. You know, some of them asked, are you sure? They said, what are you talking about? He's doing a seminar right now down in Los Angeles. You know, he left an hour ago. He's not in Europe. So all these kind of things, I'm telling you, it's out there. You got to put some common sense with it. Watch the emotions, because people do things based upon emotions. All right? Always worry, look out for fake bills, by the way, and invoices. Sometimes what happens, people will send you bills. The bills look real. You never pay attention to it. You just go ahead and write the check to it just to go ahead and get it done. Hold on a second. I'm getting a call here. So hold on a second. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share? Hello? Hello? Well, let's see here. I'm not sure. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts. You have a question or comment to share? Well, I'm not sure what's going on. I think I'm going to lose this person. I'll try one more time. 1514. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Yeah, Jim, can you hear me?
Yes, I can now. Thank you so much.
Yeah, there we are. There, I must have been the Bluetooth before. I was listening to, from the start about all these scams, and I got some additional suggestions that your listeners might be interested in hearing.
Okay.
You know, caller ID is so important. I mean, it's worth a few extra bucks a month, whatever it might cost to get it, because you can see right away if it's a number you don't recognize, you don't answer it. But it's important, and also important to get that phone number too, if you do decide to pick it up and find out it's a scam. Because, like you say, if you want to call the FBI, you got to have a number to give them.
Yeah, no, I think that there's so much that's going on right now with all of this. I would fully agree that. And can you repeat that? What is that called? Core ID?
Caller ID.
I'm sorry, caller ID. Got it. Okay, ID.
Yeah, caller ID. Look at the number before you even pick up the phone. But if you should pick it up, and you say they try to keep you on the line as much as possible, if you have access to a computer while you're on the line with these people, all you have to do is Google that phone number if you have caller ID, and it'll tell you if it's a scam.
You know, I wonder
there's so many.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. There's so many. Go ahead.
There are a number of sites where they keep track of this, where people have called in and say, you know, this number's a scam, this number's a scam, and it'll tell you this number has received, you know, we received 20 complaints on this number.
Oh, so they actually track it. Well, that's good information.
Yeah. If you Google any of these scam numbers, chances are it'll come up, and you'll see on Google, it'll say it's a scam.
But let me ask you a question. What would happen when they turn around and they call it, you know, what we haven't talked about is landlines versus cell phones, because sometimes people have a block and you don't know who's calling in because they got their number blocked. So if it's a cell phone and they're blocking their number, you're not going to be able to see it.
Well, if they're blocking it, then definitely you don't answer it.
I know, but you know, you'd be surprised how many people answer block calls. They just do. Some people just answer the phone. You know, depending on the type of business that they're in, especially, they're gonna answer the phone. But now on the landlines, you know, you look at the landlines, I agree with you. On the landline phones, you don't necessarily know, because most people, if they have a landline phone, they're just going to pick up the phone and say hello. Now, some phones on the landline phones, they still have that blocking feature. So I don't know. You know, it's kind of hard. That's why I think the bottom line, that stopgap has to be that you listen to what they're saying and put some common sense to it.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Oh, sure. And now you also mentioned about the collection agencies with credit cards and all harassing.
Right.
My personal experience then from many years ago, one way to stop them, whenever they call, say, well, excuse me, I'm going to put you on speakerphone. I'm going to get a tape recorder. I want to tape our conversation. They will not talk to you any further. It's true. It's true. They will tell you. They will tell you, oh, well, we're recording our conversation at our end for your benefit. And you tell them, well, that's exactly what I want to do.
Right, because they'll say it's for quality control. You know they're not doing it for quality control. They're doing it for other reasons. That has nothing to do with quality control. They want to make sure whatever you say to them, they've got proof that they had the conversation with you. That's what that's all about.
And you can have proof that they harassed you too. That's why they don't. That's why they don't want to talk. They don't want to talk into a. They want to have your recording at your end.
Right, right. Well, I've heard people that tell me some of those collection calls to them can be pretty, you know, pretty bad. The way the people talk to them.
Oh yeah, They don't care.
Well,
they don't care.
They're working on a commission. They're working on a commission, and it's what they're doing is putting pressure on you, because every call that they make that they collect money on, they're getting money for it. So they'll say and do whatever they have to do in order to get the person that's on the phone to give them, you know, either a commitment to pay the money or give them a credit card over the telephone to take the payment. They're doing it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. There's also, you know, you mentioned about the other scams that they have. I'm calling from New Jersey. Here in New Jersey, a couple of years ago, we had a scam going around where they call, especially they target senior citizens because they seem to figure they're gullible or whatever. I don't know, but they would call and say that pretend they're from the IRS, and that's a common scam, as you well know, and say, you know, you owe X amount of dollars on last year, blah 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 blah, and you need to send give us money now, blah blah. And if we don't, you know, well, if you don't want to pay, we're going to have to send somebody, you know, to the house. Well, at that point, you call their bluff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get that one. And, you know, it's true.
You know what,
they do take advantage of senior citizens, no doubt about it.
Well, one thing though, you call their bluff, just say, well, fine, send somebody over here. I keep a loaded shotgun next to the door at all times. Go ahead. Send somebody over here. I don't care. That usually stops the conversation right there.
Well,
you know, you got to once you realize they're it's a scam. You can play their game.
Play their game.
Win.
Play their game. No doubt about it. Well, hey, I appreciate you calling in and giving those suggestions. I don't know about the one about the shotgun by the door, but the other suggestions were certainly very good. I appreciate you calling in.
Okay, good show, Jim.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, okay. Hey, listen, guys. You know, there's some of the information. Like I said, the information is always good. But I don't know about the shotgun by the door, guys. I don't want you getting that violent. I'd rather have you just hang up the telephone. You know, so from that perspective anyway. Look, here's the bottom line. The bottom line is that we're living in an age where technology actually works against us in many different ways. You know, back in the day, you know, it was the person coming to your door, knocking on the door, maybe trying to sell you something. You know, nowadays it's so easy to reach out to you while you're in the comfort of your home through the internet, over the phones now. All this technology is creating all of these problems. I'll tell you the bottom line. The bottom line is you got to put some common sense to some of this. You know, don't think that somebody's just going to give you something for free. And I'm not saying there aren't situations out there, but look, generally speaking, people don't give you things for free. You know, it's like those ads you see on those commercials sometimes, but they'll turn around and say, hey, we're going to give you this for $19.95. Oh, and by the way, you know, we'll send you another one free. All you got to do is pay the shipping and the handling. Come on. Okay, that just means that all they did was price it at each one of those things at $10, and you're paying the $10 twice for the same thing. I mean, you know, those things, maybe you're getting something, I don't know. But look, just put some common sense with it, okay? All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but let me remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. Hey, look, if you like what you heard, do me a favor and spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, be safe, but more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Talk to you next week. Be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.